Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Changing Tides podcast. In each episode, we invite guests to have honest conversations about their mental health journeys with the goal of destigmatizing mental health within the Asian American Pacific Islander community. Due to the nature of the podcast, we'll be discussing a variety of mental health topics and possibly triggering experiences. While we and the majority of our guests are not trained professionals, we encourage you to practice self-care while listening and seek professional guidance if you or a loved one is in need of support. With that said, let's start the episode.
Hello, my name is Nicole Oshima, and I describe my mental health journey as a learning experience.
Hi, everyone. I am your host, Matthew Yonemura. Thank you so much for listening. We have a really special guest on this episode, someone that I see all the time at Little Tokyo events, and someone that I'm really excited for you to hear from. I hope everyone listening is doing well. Something that I just wanted to share a little bit about before we get into this episode is just, you know, sharing a little bit more about my personal experiences with therapy. And I just wrapped up 10 sessions with my therapist. This therapist is someone I got through the Little Tokyo Service Center Mental Wellness Measures, which is kind of a similar program to what we offer with CT Stream, but it's 10 sessions per employee, and it's covered by LTSC. So this therapist happens to be on the directory with CT Stream as well, so that was really cool to work with her and, you know, see how 10 sessions worked out for me, because it's something that we offer to the participants of CT Stream. And, you know, I discussed this a little bit in the episode, but, you know, I kind of maybe overtook that conversation from our guest. So I didn't want to share too much, but I probably did in the interview. So anyway, I just wanted to share a little bit here and say how much I really took away from 10 sessions of therapy. And I'm lucky enough to be in the situation where I can continue to see them outside of the Little Tokyo Service Center stipend. And, you know, I could honestly see a difference in how I approach conflict, how I approach anxiety, and how I handle what I would once consider negative emotions. And I think I've really learned a lot in how to cope or how to manage the array of emotions that I experience. So I loved working with this therapist. I loved the 10 sessions. And I really think, you know, obviously I work for Changing Tides and I believe in CT Stream, but I really do think people could gain a lot from 10 sessions of therapy. So we do still take submissions for CT Stream. The link for that is in our website still. So go ahead and check that out if you are interested and if you're in between the ages of 16 and 29 years old. But with that said, I want to get straight into this interview that I had, because, I mean, I'm blabbing on here, but I think it's worth sharing. So I just wanted to discuss that for a little bit. But anyway, I want to get into this guest. This guest is the same age as me. She is a huge advocate for Little Tokyo. She is at pretty much all of the events in Little Tokyo and for the JA community. Her brother is also super cool, so shout out to Chet. He performed at one of our galas 2 years ago at this point. But forget him for today. This is about our guest today, Nicole Oshima. Nicole, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I have been wanting you on the show for a while, and now things have finally aligned for this to happen. So before I get into all of this, the stuff that I think you do is super interesting, I want to kind of get into this mental health journey and why you described it as a learning experience.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I think I told you a little bit before, I always felt like I wasn't like worthy per se to be on the podcast. I think that kind of ties into my mental health journey being described as a learning experience. I think in terms of what there is to learn about myself and what there is to learn about mental health as a whole, as like an industry, as kind of like how to live with your mental health and things like that. I think I'm learning every day. And one thing that did really help me was I did the CT stream. I was one of the participants this year. I know we want to talk about it a little bit later, but I think that really did help me to learn a little bit more about myself and my own journey with mental health. And yeah, it was really great. I'm really appreciative to Changing Tides for the opportunity and such an easy experience overall. And I would definitely recommend it to anyone who's even considering therapy. I really, really enjoyed it, and I'm so grateful to have been part of it.
Well, in terms of our purposes, I could end it here because that was such a great, like,
Yeah.
that was such a great plug for CT Stream. But kidding, like, jokes aside, like, I really do want to hear more about, like, your journey. And I'm so glad that this played a role in it. But, I think with that being maybe a big step for you in your experience with mental health, would you say there was a point earlier in life where you would say your journey began?
So I grew up doing gymnastics. I never did basketball like a lot of people in the JA community. I was a gymnast since I was really young, and I was a competitive gymnast starting in middle school. So that was one of the biggest parts of my mental health journey for sure, because gymnastics is mostly a mental sport. It's kind of how they frame it, as like our team did, our coach did. Like the physical part is really important, but when it comes down to it, it's you versus the equipment, you versus your own mental roadblocks. And so I think my mental health journey definitely started at around that age. And it was really interesting too, because it's a really formative time where I feel like mental health isn't really, or it is stressed now, but I think back when I was back then, I'm not that old, but even just 10 years ago, like it was not stressed as much. And I think it wasn't stressed as much in the framework of a teenage, like a teenager. I think before it was like, oh, you're going through puberty, you're just a teenager, it's hormones and stuff. But I think those things are super formative. And so having gymnastics as that crutch for my mental health definitely has shaped who I am as a person and my like journey with it as well. I think my coach was one of the best coaches I could ever have. And so she really helped us to become like mentally strong to be also physically strong. So I would definitely say gymnastics. And I think that's another reason why my mental health journey is also a learning experience, is because I quit when I was going into college. And so not having that when I was not like going through college and an adult now, I think it's been interesting to kind of navigate life without it. I feel like I did it for so long that that was kind of a big part of a big hurdle for my mental health, is like, how do I get this out? So yeah.
Could you explain some of the ways, because I totally get that, like, sports and like your mentality approaching it. Like, I think, not to like say they're the same, but like basketball too, like so much of it is confidence or just like your approach to the sport. So how would you say like the mental aspect of being a gymnast translates to your mental health story outside or mental health journey outside of the sport?
Yeah, so like just surface level, I think like when you look at like the balance beam, for example, right? Like it's a 4-inch piece of plywood 4 feet off the ground. And to even just be able to walk across it, let alone do tricks on it or any of the apparatuses, I think you can't ever hesitate or you'll hurt yourself. So like at the end of the day, physical health is also at the end of this kind of journey too, but you have to really be strong-minded to motivate yourself to believe in yourself that you can do it, because if you don't, you're going to get severely hurt. So things like that, and then also just like motivation and willpower. I think it really like definitely affected my motivation. Like I'm very self-starting, and I think it's because like a lot of it is very mundane, like conditioning, like even for basketball, like conditioning is so boring and things like that. But you have to kind of remember why you're doing it. I was also like the captain of my gymnastics team. I was the oldest, so I was also the captain. So part of that was showing the younger team, my younger teammates, like leading by example. And so there were times like, and there were times where I didn't do that, obviously. I was like 13 to 18 years old, so it's impossible to not falter when you're that age. But like I can't just do things because I don't want to, or I can't, like, I have to stay strong so that these younger kids who are, 7 to 13 or whatever, they're way younger than me, don't feel like they can just quit at any moment. And I think also the kind of stigma of quitting in gymnastics, and not so much during the pandemic because I think there were a lot of other reasons, but quitting was really like a really big thing in our gym. Like, you really have to get to a certain point to quit. I think it just felt really like shameful, I guess, or embarrassing. And so that was another thing is like, we don't want to quit. We're champions. My club was called Club Champion, so we never quit. We stay motivated, and we also like support each other. So just those are just some of the kind of surface level things, I think.
Is that how you know Anna Glenn, or did you meet her from college?
I met her in college, but I was a UCLA gymnastics like fan since I was in middle school, and so we would go to all the meets and stuff, and we would all be like so excited to get all the signatures and meet all the gymnasts. And then when I went there, I met her in through a mutual friend, and then we had a class together. And then because I was such a big fan, like I felt like I could kind of keep up with all of the kind of conversation and stuff. So yeah, we're still good friends today, but I think gymnastics definitely did bring us together, and we are very like-minded, I would like to think, because of that. Because like she was obviously elite level. I just kind of did it like for fun in high school, but the principles are still very similar, I think, in like the values of the sport.
Yeah, totally. Because I remember you both talking at one of our galas, I think. And I was like, oh yeah, well, UCLA connection. But this is my first time hearing that you did gymnastics, so that's super cool,
Yeah, I think
to
it
find
definitely
out.
gave me a leg up to like talk to her too when I'm a huge fan, but I could kind of keep up in the conversation.
See, that would have given me the same confidence to go up to like UCLA basketball,
That's different. I think that's a
though.
little different. Like
Right.
they're kind of celebrities on campus too, so that's there's
Fair.
an added element of that too.
Fair, fair. So I guess before I move on from the gymnastics part, because one other thing that was interesting is the part of no longer having gymnastics as a crutch. So I guess, how did things change for you once you were no longer like practicing being a gymnast, or it was no longer your main sport? Like, how did that impact your mental health journey, and how did maybe things change for you?
I think something that was really good about having that is knowing what I need to be mentally healthy. And I think knowing that I had an outlet in gymnastics, I kind of needed something to kind of fill that hole. But when I was in high school, I think the main thing was I felt so much like FOMO because I had to train so much that I was like, I'm quitting in college because I want to have like a normal college experience. I don't want to spend hours in the gym. And kind of that was my whole life, right? I was doing like just gymnastics, and then I was able to do like student government because I argued like I could do with this like lower amount of hours, I could shift schedules to kind of allow myself to have that like balance. But it was really hard because you just have to keep up your like physical stamina and stuff. So going into college, I was really excited to try something new. And then in the summer of junior year, I did the Kizuna leadership program with Kizuna. And that was like, it really changed my life, honestly. I think it opened my eyes to the community that wasn't my family, because before the community was just my 60 family members and like, our family get-togethers and going to Obon with them. But I think, I did Kizuna, I met a bunch of other people who cared about Little Tokyo. I met a lot of people who were interested in learning about what's affecting our community. And I learned about NSU, which is the Nikkei Student Union. And a lot of the NSU members were like the counselors there. And so when I was going to college, I was already seeking that out. So I knew that they had a really big club at UCLA, and I was really excited to do that. And so, I kind of swapped it, I would say. Like, I stopped doing gymnastics, but then NSU kind of became my whole life. So I think that transition was really easy because I already knew how to stay dedicated and motivated and all of those things and apply them outside of the gym to something else. But I guess that's kind of how it naturally fell after I went to college.
Gotcha. So, okay, so I'm going to change the order of the questions I have a little bit, because Little Tokyo has already entered the conversation. So how, like, what was that experience like for you? And then I guess how involved were you with Little Tokyo prior to that Kizuna camp?
Very minimal. Like I was not really that involved. I would go with my like Wachan and Jichan to Little Tokyo. They were really involved. Like they volunteered at the museum. We would go to eat there and stuff and go to Nisei Week, and they go to Higashi, so we would go to Obon there. So all of my involvement in the Little Tokyo community was through them when I was younger. And like I mentioned, I didn't play basketball. So I grew up in Pasadena, but I wasn't involved in the Pasadena Japanese American community at all because I didn't do that. Like my brother played basketball, which is actually very surprising. Like, you know, my brother, he did it for a little bit, but that was like the extent of it. So we weren't really involved there. So I think kind of not having that community really made me interested in what I could do. And also, like, to be transparent, I was also to help like pad my college application. So I kind of came in with like a bit of selfish intentions, I think. Like this leadership thing will help me get into UCLA because that's where I want to go. But then I think it ended up really changing the trajectory of what I wanted to do once I got there. And so after that I tried to like, I had more time because I didn't do gymnastics too. I was able to volunteer more, visit more, do like go to a lot more events and things like that. So yeah, it wasn't until really I was like in like almost out of high school that I became more involved. And then NSU was definitely the catalyst for my like more intense involvement, I would say.
It's so funny because I think that's kind of similar in trajectory, but I think my involvement came much later. Like I was really just only volunteering with Changing Tides. And then once I started working for LTSC, I was like, oh, like I really want to be here and support the community. And like then like getting involved with the Budokan basketball leagues, and I'm around there so much more often. I think like one of the first times I ever went to the Budokan, just to like shoot around, not in the leagues yet, I went to Little Tokyo to eat after, but we just went to Spitz, like the
Oh my
Mediterranean
God.
food, which is really good, but like I wasn't aware of like the legacy businesses there. I was like, oh, like I didn't even think about maybe we should go to some of these legacy Japanese restaurants to eat. But because I know you've been involved with Little Tokyo for a while, but what has been like your evolution in terms of jobs within Little Tokyo or volunteering?
Yeah, so it was none, I would say. And then I did the Kizuna Leadership Program. And they have a pipeline at Kizuna where they kind of lay out different by the ages that you are, like what different programs you can do. So after that, I started NSU and I did the Nikkei Community Internship. And then NSU throughout school. And then I did. During the pandemic, so one of my friends, Rain, actually reached out to me and asked if I would be interested in like coordinating a hot meal like delivery program for seniors. And I was really interested because I was just working a part-time job just during the pandemic. I graduated in 2020, so there wasn't really anything other to do. So I just worked at like a gift shop in Pasadena. So I was looking to kind of do like more of a career job and get back involved in the community because I was really feeling the effects of like not having those things and very like in-person things. I think we had a lot of Zoom meetings, we had a lot of virtual summer camps and things, but it didn't really feel the same. And so she asked me if I was interested, and then they ended up reaching out for like a part-time job doing the LT Eats program, which was a hot meal delivery program out of LTSC, and we delivered hot meals to seniors in six affordable housing buildings in Little Tokyo, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And so I did that for 7 months, and we did it until we got like grant funding, but until they kind of deemed that everyone had enough vaccines and that it was safer for seniors to kind of go out. The purpose of the program was kind of to just keep them in. Like it wasn't to isolate them further or anything like that. We just wanted to make sure that they were able to have this service and also support small businesses at the same time. So all of the meals were coming from legacy or family-owned businesses in Little Tokyo. So that was something I did for 7 months. And then I wanted to continue staying involved in the community. And so after that cycle was over, I started working at the Budokan for 4 months. And then I got the job that I have now. But I wouldn't have really expected to do either of those jobs, but they were some of the most fulfilling. Like, it was the most fulfilling year that I think I've had in a really long time, if not like my whole life, because, when you do community work and in college, you can see your friends and you can see the events you're going to. But I think you really need like that face-to-face connection to just really feel like what you're doing is making a difference. And so that was really, really helpful for me. And I think it was helpful for the volunteers to feel like they were needed and helpful as well. So those were two jobs. And then now I'm working kind of with like Yo and just trying to go to as many community events as possible while working a full-time job. So that's where I'm at right now.
Got it. Yeah, it's funny. I actually did the It wasn't LT Eats, but it was like the Little Tokyo version of it, but in Gardena, so out of the JCI. So I volunteered doing that. I was just one of the people to help deliver the food, and like that was really fulfilling for me too. That's when I was out of college. I was volunteering, so I didn't have a job, and it was just fulfilling to be able to drop it off to the seniors in the area, and like they were very grateful for it, of course, and they started like having boxes outside of their houses, like decorated and like saying thank you on them when where you drop off the food. So it was like such a cool way for me to get involved. And I don't think a lot of people I don't think a lot of people our age or just in general think about working in like nonprofit, because I think like there's so many jobs within the nonprofit sector, but then like I just don't think like when I first heard nonprofit, I was like, who's getting paid then? And it's like it's all volunteer based, right? But obviously there's a lot of roles within it. So I think it opened my eyes to the possibility of working in a nonprofit as a job. But anyway, I just thought it was cool that that was like one of your first ways of getting involved with Little Tokyo. But you did mention Yo. Can you share what Yo Media is and how it all started?
So Yo Media is like an umbrella organization of a couple different smaller kind of, I would say, orgs. We're all pretty much volunteer run at the moment. But it started as like a blog during kind of the peak of lockdown. Just a couple of friends that wanted to stay connected to the community and do something when it was like actual like lockdown, like quarantine time. So I believe the first issue was actually like a Children's Day like pamphlet almost. So they had like activities for parents who might be stuck at home with their kids. And it was a way to for them to learn about Kodomo no Hi and do activities and kind of give parents a break. And they were all people that I met through like volunteering and community work, and they started the org. And then during a couple months later, they reached out to me asking me to write an article from the perspective of someone graduating during COVID. And so it was like a BuzzFeed listicle type of like dry humor, I guess. Like I tried my best to be like that BuzzFeed millennial and just kind of talk about like what it was like to really graduate during that time, because it was real. No one had ever done it before, I think. Like, I mean, yes, but at the same time, no, I think having that like digital connection and really like documenting how we felt. And then a couple months later, if not maybe like a year later, Craig reached out to me and asked if I wanted to be on the editorial committee. And so I became like a writer, and now I'm the editorial chair and work on the marketing committee and kind of do everything. So that's the magazine. We also have camp, which we are in our second year of, and just had almost 120 kids, over 70 staff. It was really fun. It was extremely rewarding, and I feel like it was super successful on both ends. And then we also have Yo Records, which is like an independent music label. So these are all just like little side projects that people involved with the organization, they're like passion projects almost. And so I'm a volunteer, but I feel very passionate about sharing stories and contributing to, I guess, the perspective of our generation. I think something that is kind of missing from our community right now is like how we feel. I think there's a lot of like literature and documentation of maybe like the incarceration time and the redress and reparations movement, but we're also living through historical times, unprecedented times, as they would say. And so Having an outlet for us to express how we feel as Yonsei, Gosei, Shinike, mixed race. Like, I think it's just really important to me to have that platform. But it is volunteer run, so we can only do as much as we can do. But I would love to see it grow a lot more in the future. And it really started from like just a blog in 2020 to now this organization with a bunch of different branches. So it's really exciting.
Did you go to school for writing, or where did you find like comfort in writing and like sharing your voice in that way?
I was a comm major, communications major, so I guess it's kind of related. I actually, like you, I wanted to do film and television when I was going to school. I thought that I would be a producer. That was my dream, was to be a producer. And then I did a couple internships and decided it wasn't for me, and I work in music now. But I think I'm a little bit misleading. I don't love writing. I feel like writing sometimes can be really hard. But what I love is, I think connecting with people, and
Got
writing
it.
is a great way of doing that. I also love doing interviews. I love getting to know people that way. So I think the platform itself is what I'm passionate about. I do struggle with writing a lot of times. I think being vulnerable is really hard, and sitting down and writing is even harder. So I try to find people who I think have a really good voice, and I think that's what I'm passionate about, is bringing the voice out in other people. And maybe sometimes it's me, most of the time it's not. But I think that's where the communications, I think, comes into play. I love to help people say what they want to say.
Gotcha. That's awesome though, because I've no one thing that I envy about you, that what I've seen you in events is how comfortable you are approaching someone to talk to them about a piece or to interview them, and then how open they instantly are to you as well. Like, I think that's, I don't know what you do, but you have a talent for making them comfortable, and you also, maybe it's just because of how comfortable you are when you first approach someone,
Thank you
but
so much. Oh my
I've
gosh.
noticed that. And I get scared. I also think like not many like Japanese men have facial hair, so like I think I look older than I am, and then also I'm a little scary at first glance, so I think maybe I'm not as disarming, but like whenever I try to approach someone, it's like half and
Oh
half.
my gosh. No, I feel like, no, that is something I also envy about you, is how well you can carry yourself. So maybe we should just combine to be one person, and then we can talk to every single person.
That sounds good. And then we could get a little Tokyo quote from them, and also Yomiuri a quote from them at the
Yeah,
same
that
time.
would be good. No, yeah, I think that something that NSU definitely helped me with, like public speaking, like being comfortable talking in front of a lot of people, and even especially if you don't know them. I think that's something that organization, like being the leader of an student organization, enforces in you, because you want all the new people to kind of join your org, right? So that is something that I definitely practiced. It wasn't like an innate sense. I think I practiced it a lot. But I think that's also something that's really special about the Japanese American community, is that it is really small. If you think about it, it's really close. And so it, like, I don't feel as nervous to reach out to people, because I know that they're like just a friend or a family friend, or they're, a friend of a friend or something like that. So it takes a lot of pressure off. And I think thinking about the community in ways to help you advance yourself and your career, like, it's such a great resource. And at the end of the day, you get to meet new people. And I love that. I'm an extrovert, so I get a lot of energy from other people. But yeah, I think that's why I also love our community, is because we are able to meet so many different people and continue to share these connections too.
So I want to get back to some of the little Tokyo stuff and more about you, but just on the topic of like media and all the different aspects of Yale Media, has there been like a piece of music, a film, a specific musician? I know you're a big fan of certain musicians, and I want to ask you about that later, but is there anything that has really like spoken to you emotionally or from a mental health perspective? Because I know like those types of things you can really attach to. So maybe something that either spoke to you in a specific moment, or something that's like, oh, that really kind of changed my perspective on a certain aspect of my life.
This was a question that I have been thinking about for a really long time, because I don't know if I can say there's like one piece of media. I feel like I am every piece of media I've consumed in one body. So the answer that I decided on was that I like to find media that speaks to me in the moment that I'm feeling, the feelings that I am feeling, if that makes sense. Like, I think that's the best part about growing up now is that everything is really accessible. And so if I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'm gonna try to, I got the turned off. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I actively search out for things that could either, benefit, like help me emotionally or distract me even. If I'm feeling sad, I love music that I can relate to because I know that I'm not alone. And I think those are things that I can't pinpoint to one specific artist because they're such universal themes. But I think the universal theme here is that we're not alone, and I think everyone does go through everything together. And so that's what I decided on. It was so hard for me to decide what one piece of media because I really do watch and listen to and consume so many things. So I couldn't really think of one. Is there one that you were thinking of in particular?
Not so much. Just hearing you speak though, and the first answer that came to mind is honestly kind of corny, I'll admit. Okay, cool. Just make it. Did you turn on the light?
Yes.
Cool. Okay. So yeah, my answer honestly is a little bit corny, but it's okay. I don't even want to put it out there because it's corny, but
No, share,
I will
share.
share. I will share. Honestly, this is so gross. Shang-Chi, low key. I was like, oh, this is an Asian American, or no, they're Canadian, Asian Canadian. Yeah, right? He's from Canada. But it's like, he's not portraying, a specific, I don't know, he was just like in a mainstream piece of media. And I like was thinking about it. I was like, oh, also because like Asian men aren't always deep or are stereotypically not masculine for whatever reason, but then like to see Simu in a Marvel movie as the hero, I was like, oh, whoa, this is kind of different. So for some reason that kind of spoke to me, and like just how far media has come. It's not even like a top 10 Marvel movie for me, but I was just like sitting there in the theater, in a full packed theater on opening night, and being like, oh wow, like look at all these people here for an Asian superhero. So yeah, that's the one that came to mind for me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the reason I wanted to get into film originally is because I wanted to be part of this like wave of representation. I grew up in the 626 and watching Wong Fu and Ryan Higa and all those people, and I feel
Yes.
like, and they filmed there, right? Like they're kind of based out of that area too, and so that really motivated me when I was in high school and just wanting to do that as a career. But I think it's been greater than I could have ever hoped for. Obviously, everything everywhere all at once. And I think there's so much. There was one thing I did really kind of feel with like the mental health themes is like, I think there's a lot of media right now about grief. And that's something that has definitely been cathartic for me to watch in different forms, whether it's The Summer I Turned Pretty, which I'm watching right now, which isn't really that good, but it talks about grief from a teenage girl's perspective, right? And I think that if I was younger and if I was like 10 years ago, watched this, I think it would have really changed how I like navigated situations, I think, because it's showing that grief is not linear. It's not one of these things. And especially after graduating during the pandemic and just being scared that bad things were going to continue to happen. I think that a lot of the media that has come out since then has been really good for my mental health to also consume because it's showing that, again, this theme of we're not alone, that grief is processed in many different ways. And so that was one thing. There's like, themes of grief and parenthood and just coming of age stories that I think I really resonated with because like growing up is the biggest part of your life so far. And so just like feeling that we're not alone growing up and being a teenager and being a teenager who's also 24, which is me, that these things really like resonated with me, I think, the most. And then now seeing this wave of Asian representation, and then even getting the niche Asian representation coming of age stories or more like those things, I think are really great And like you said, they actually are probably speaking to my mental health subconsciously because I'm able to see myself in them. And something different from like a K-drama or a Japanese drama where they're Asian, like Asian American
Right,
representation.
right. And that just the blow up of K-pop is also just like that's like very like Asian, not Asian American, but just like the universal love around it is crazy. It's funny because my friend who is really into the gym, he's like mostly like an electric like house music type of person. We were lifting weights together. He's a big gym guy, and his like big pump up song was Cupid. So I was like, what is going on? So just like to see, I don't know. It's cool to see how often Asian culture or Asian celebrity or Asian voices are popping up even in places you're not expecting it.
Yeah, and I think that that stuff has also kind of guided or driven my mental health perspective as well, because that industry is extremely toxic. And I think being not from those countries and having kind of a Western view of like values and morals and things, it's really easy to kind of place our own ideals onto these people. And so navigating the mental health issues and just the toxic issues within those things, I think have helped me reflect on myself as well, and maybe just looked into like internal biases or things like that. And I can think another big thing, going back to your media question, is the way that they talk about like strength and things like that, I think are really interesting. I think a lot of them say like, "Oh, you did well today," and I feel like I'd never heard that before. Like, you know, "Oh, great job doing this or doing that," but like, if you just finished today, like that's enough. I think that was like the first time I heard that. And I was like, wow, that's actually really inspiring. Like, you just did a good job today. Tomorrow's a new day. So, just small things like that, I think, have also really helped my mental health journey, is like, hey, this is like a different way of looking at mental health within a cultural lens. And then it's not my culture, but learning about culture through that way too, has been really interesting. And navigating the mental health journey of maybe an idol, which is probably really bad. But yeah, I think that was something that really stood out to me too.
It's rare to be able to, well, I try not to put too much weight into celebrity, but I take a lot of pride in seeing celebrities speaking up about mental health. That's like one of the things I'm like, oh, like I love that you're using your platform to discuss that. So bringing it kind of back to Young Media and then Little Tokyo. I mean, you're already going to so many Little Tokyo events, but I see you at a lot of events, probably for your own enjoyment, but also for Yo Media. I'm wondering if your experiences or your relationship to Little Tokyo, I just want to know, has it evolved over time, whether it be your appreciation of it or your understanding of the culture, like from only going to Obon's with your family to where you are now, how has your appreciation for Little Tokyo evolved?
It's definitely, my appreciation for Little Tokyo has definitely deepened. I think since I got involved, it's looked and felt a lot different. When I started getting involved, the Metro Regional Connector was just an idea that wasn't like it was maybe going to be something. And it became an idea, a reality, and now it's actually built. And so, actually being present for all of those stages and kind of being there for the redevelopment and just seeing all of these new businesses come in, I think it's definitely made me feel more protective of it as well. Because instead of my grandparents taking me there, like I go there out of my own volition now too. So I definitely become really attached to it. And then, like you said, working in Little Tokyo has also given me a really different appreciation for it as well. For the people who live there, the people who work there, put on all of the events, I think that time that I worked there was really important for me to feel connected to it again, especially when we really had to make an active decision to go, right? Like before, it was like, oh, there's this event happening. Oh, there's this event happening. Let's go. There was 2 years, 3 years where that really wasn't the case. And so you had to make an effort, like, I want to support this small business today because, you know, I lived pretty far away. I lived like 35 minutes, so it wasn't a conscious choice. So I think that definitely, like, the pandemic definitely strengthened my involvement. But also, like, it is some place that I feel like is home for me, and a lot of other people. And I think now we're getting to the age where we're the ones that are going to have to take over soon. So just kind of getting ready for that, I guess, or kind of just seeing who's around, right? Like meeting up with people at events and having fun at the same time. But I think, like, trying to spread the word and get people to feel that same connection and love for it that I do.
Yeah, when I first started working at Changing Tides, I was worried about the preservation of Little Tokyo because, I hadn't really known you yet. I hadn't known some of the other like young folks who are passionate about Little Tokyo. But you're right, like we are kind of, I think there's enough people around to be able to preserve Little Tokyo and keep it alive. And did you ever do the walking tour with Mike Morase?
Yes, I did the
Yeah.
walking tour. I've done a bunch of walking tours. I led one once, actually. So, just like, I guess I've always kind of been somewhat of a history buff. But when it's Little Tokyo, it kind of comes really easy to me. Like, whenever we walk by, even the small things like, hey, do you know what this like black line on the sidewalk stands for? Or just kind of explaining things to my friends, that maybe they wouldn't have known without it, without me being there. So, just small things like that, I think, are also really important. But yeah, I did do that walking tour.
Right. And so yeah, like it's I think w once you know the history of Little Tokyo, it just makes you that much more passionate to keep it alive. So yeah, I mean, we're both 24, so like there's still people in front of us, but the more and more people we come in contact with, I'm like, oh, Little Tokyo, I think will be left in good hands. So yeah, I was worried about it once I heard about how difficult it was to keep it alive at certain points, but I'd like to think it has, it'll be around forever. So,
If we have anything to say about it, it will definitely be there forever. So,
right. I mean,
yeah.
like you were involved with the Budokan before it even opened then, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know how important that was. So kudos to you and the whole team that has worked on the Budokan. So, something you had mentioned in the very beginning was your experience with CT Stream. So I'd like to first thank you for being open to sharing your experiences about participating in it. But to start off, what led you to seeking out CT Stream as a resource?
I think it wasn't anything in particular, which I think is a little bit different and why I would say my mental health journey is a learning experience still, because I wanted to just try it out. I wasn't really facing anything or any bouts of depression or anxiety, anything that kind of warranted seeking a therapist very time sensitively. But I think that's also another reason why I really appreciate Changing Tides, is because the opportunity was so easily and readily available, even if I had like a little bit of interest in it. So I just wanted to see if therapy was something that I would benefit from. And I definitely did, even though I didn't have, like, I guess, big problems or issues that I kind of came into it with. So I just tried it out. The intake process was extremely easy. I got to be paired up with someone that fit all of the kind of descriptions that I was looking for in therapist. And then I did 10 sessions with her through Zoom, which was really flexible with my own schedule as well. And then I think I actually just stopped after 10-ish sessions. I didn't continue on because currently I didn't feel the need to. And also, like, I think a big barrier was like the financial aspect of it. And so I really appreciated having those 10 sessions at no cost to just try, right? Because I don't think I would have had the opportunity to try had it not been for CT Stream.
Yeah, I actually, so Little Tokyo Service Center does a similar program for the employees. So I actually just did a similar 10 sessions with a therapist who also happens to be a therapist with CT Stream. So I went in specifically for like anxiety, but being the Changing Tides program coordinator and then advocating for CT Stream and then a question that often comes up with CT stream is, can you really benefit from only 10 sessions of therapy? And I found that I personally really benefited from the 10 sessions. And then to hear that you did as well is awesome. I want to ask you about the takeaways that you had from CT stream.
I think going back to what I mentioned in the beginning of not feeling like my problems were big enough to be addressed by therapy or considered a mental health issue, I think my therapist definitely did not belittle any of the issues that I brought to the table. And I was in like a solutions-based therapy like session, so it was a lot of kind of finding ways to address a lot of these issues that I was coming with. So I felt really equipped for future problems that are maybe similar. If those do enter my life again, I have those in my kind of like toolkit. Another thing is that I did ask like how the sessions would differ if I met with her on a more regular basis after 10 sessions. So I do have that kind of nugget of information as well, where it would be less maybe issue based or top like time sensitive things. And more just like getting to the root of a lot of these causes. So 10 sessions definitely, like if I'm being transparent, isn't enough to get to the root of your traumas or anything like that. But if there's pressing problems that you feel like you would like a professional's advice with, that's what the 10 sessions is definitely useful for and benefited me definitely. And another thing too is I specifically asked for someone who is knowledgeable with our age group. And so I found that asking career-based advice too was extremely helpful in guiding my mental health journey too. Even though it was rooted in work, those problems do kind of bleed over to your personal life and things like that. So she was really helpful in terms of being almost a mentor, which I think was something that I didn't expect, but I think it's something that I'm going to be seeking out also. So not like a therapist per se, but I think having that emotional and like professional support was something that I didn't realize I needed. So, having her kind of identify that like missing hole in my life was definitely helpful. So, things like that, where maybe it's like a starting off point, and maybe if you're not ready to do therapy full time or you're not financially ready for it, you can find ways to work around it. But also just, I did ask her about things that were persisting in my everyday life that she did help with. So those were kind of my main takeaways. And also, someone that was involved in the Japanese American community, I talked to her about issues that normal or not normal, non-Nikkei therapists probably wouldn't have the answer to. So, a lot of what we were talking about is, who's going to be the leader of the community once, in 20 years? And is it going to be me? I don't have time for that. Like, things like that, I think, are so niche and so specific. But she had at least, she's not even from SoCal, but she had that knowledge to talk me down and like kind of navigate me through a lot of these issues. And it was so helpful to me and like, and burnout and all of those things, I think, too.
Yeah, I think an underrated aspect of, I'm kind of advertising my own work here, but an underrated part of CT Stream is the cultural sensitivity side of it, because the thing that keeps coming up in my therapy is the pressure that I put on myself. And I think that's a lot of JAs, a lot of Asian Americans, is this overwhelming pressure we put on ourselves. Which I think is so normalized in our culture that I didn't even think it was a problem. I would ask my therapist, like, isn't that a good thing sometimes to put pressure on yourself? And but I mean, like, I guess there's a give and take with that, which is something we discussed. But for you and your experience, I know you expressed some of it, but was there an added level of comfort having someone who is also AAPI?
Definitely, definitely, and even more specifically, Japanese American, and she does have like kids, so there were aspects where I feel like I could my issue, like I would say like if when I was younger, I wish I had this, and so like how do you feel about that? I kind of like brought that up, but generally, like I don't have a lot to complain about. I think that my mental health journey is definitely going to be a long one. But she was extremely helpful. And I think also having that she was a female, like a female identifying AAPI therapist, I just felt really seen, and that was priceless to me, I think, even though I didn't pay anything, but like it was definitely something that I really appreciated about the program.
Awesome.
And it was really easy to find her. I think that was another thing. I think the intake coordinator presented three people who did kind of also fit. So it wasn't like she was the only one. There were a lot of options, but it was just like once you're kind of getting through that gender identity and like ethnicity kind of boxes or cultural sensitivity boxes, then you can go down and be more specific about what type of therapist you want. So I really thought that that was extremely helpful as well, and I really appreciated it.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing so many kind words about CT Stream, and then also just for sharing so much about you, Yo Media, and Little Tokyo and everything else we've discussed. And I just have some silly questions, some silly quick fire ones, which people say are the hardest ones. But
Okay.
before we get to those, is there anything else you'd like to say before we get to that?
I don't think so.
Okay,
Yeah.
cool. All right, so just a few quick fire questions. If you could invite three people to dinner, dead or alive, who would they be?
I was not expecting. Okay. I li literally listened to the podcast and I completely forgot to prep for this question.
Is my favorite one.
It's so hard. Three people dead or alive. Let's see. I'm literally blanking. Okay, this is gonna. Okay, well, first is Taylor Swift because I'm a huge Swiftie, and I would just love to like tell her how much she's like impacted my life, but she probably hears that from everyone, so that's probably one. The second would probably be my dad's dad because he passed away before I was born. So I would love to hear about like his side of things and like his growth up and everything like that. I recently went to the Manzanar pilgrimage and actually found a photo of him when he was younger and his like
Wow.
family in the museum, and that was so crazy. It was very surreal to me, and so I would love to hear more about that and just what like living during that time was like, because my mom's mom also was incarcerated, but I think I've heard her story because she was 13 at the time, but I'd be interested. He was a little bit younger, so I wonder if he even remembered it, like what that time was like, and then just like what living before I was born was like, kind of. Which would be a crazy two people, which already, I don't know about the vibes of this dinner. Taylor Swift and my late Oji Chan. And then, let's see, third. Oh my God, I feel like I really keep up with pop culture so much, and then you put me on the spot, and I can't think of a single person that I would want to talk to. I think I'd want to talk to. Oh my God. Okay, so this is like really stupid, but I would be really interested to hear like the behind the scenes workings of like maybe what like being in a K-pop group is like. And my group is NCT 127, and so I'd want to. It doesn't matter any of them, but I want to hear like what's actually happening behind the scenes because we don't know. And
Right.
we can only speculate. So I guess I'd pick Mark because he speaks English.
Got it.
And he's also in like three groups. So that would be really crazy. Mark Lee, Taylor Swift, and my deceased Oji Chan.
Might get some good music out of it.
Yeah, oh, it's Mark's birthday. Happy birthday, Mark.
Okay, this is a direct follow-up to one of your responses. You get to tell Taylor Swift one thing, one sentence. What do you tell her? It could be life advice you have to give her. It could be something that about how much she means to you.
I think I would just say like thank you so much for encapsulating the teenage girl experience in such like an accurate way. I think that
Oh no,
her
you have to
music.
stop there. You have to stop there. I told you one
Okay,
second. No, I'm
stop.
just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm
Okay,
kidding. Go
yeah.
ahead. Go ahead,
No,
please.
I think I love like that's why I think music really helped me through my mental health journey, was because like I just felt so seen during that time. Like all of these people who are actually our age or going through it, like it really is crazy that we've never had an original experience in our life and like having such beautiful art to like get us through all of these times. So, yeah, I think it is like I'm going to see her on the Eras tour again. But it's just like it's such an amazing experience to like that all of us in that like you know throughout this whole tour around the whole world can all relate to her music and it means so much more than just music at this point, I think. So
That's awesome.
yeah.
I gotta admit, I can't get with it. But
We
I
can't.
can't get with the Taylor Swift, but I am new to enjoying K-pop, I will admit. There's a few that I like. But maybe I'll become a Swiftie someday. We'll see.
It's okay. You there's no time, there's no pressure, no time. Maybe you'll get it eventually.
Maybe. I think you already said this one, but if you had to pick your favorite K-pop group at the moment, who would it be?
Well, my top two are NCT 127 and Seventeen. So
Got
those
it.
are my top two like ultimate groups of all time.
Got it.
Yeah.
What is something that most people do not know about you?
Maybe okay, other than the gymnastics thing, because I don't think a lot of people knew that I did gymnastics. I broke my collarbone in the second grade because a kid, we were playing flag football and he ran into my collarbone and broke it.
Oh my God. Was it
So I have it.
horrible?
It was the most painful thing I have ever experienced in my life. Like his skull cracked my bone.
I've heard collarbone is really painful, actually.
Yeah, because you can't do anything. You can only wear a sling. So you can't like, you know, get a cast or anything. And then after that, I went to go visit my cousins and their parents are really like, you know, you don't need all of that stuff. Like, you know, you're fine. And so I actually didn't wear the sling and I feel like it actually didn't heal properly
Really?
after that. It's like there's a
Oh
little bump,
no.
but it's fine. It was just a fracture, so
Okay.
it wasn't that big
Hope
of a
that
deal.
kid's skull is okay to this day.
You know, what? I broke my collarbone. What about
That's a
forgetting
head injury. That's a
the
head injury.
skull? That's true. Football is dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Especially because kids are reckless. A place that you have not traveled to, but you would love to.
I've always wanted to go to Thailand, actually.
That's cool. And to round it out, so what would the title of your autobiography be?
So this was actually a question my friends did like a birthday like Jeopardy, and so the one I chose was like a Taylor Swift reference, which is like Nicole's version. Yeah, so I feel like that was it. They did some like funny ones too, but I feel like that would be a good autobiography for me.
I like that.
Definitely,
You could kind of spoof one of the album covers as your book cover too.
definitely.
I like that. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I just realized I didn't know until today that we're the same age. I don't know why, but I think it's because you are friends with everyone in CT who's older than me. I thought you were older than me, but now I know we're the same age. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for being such an advocate for Little Tokyo and for LTSC, and I'll see you at another event very soon, I'm sure.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for letting me ramble. Like, I don't know if any of this made sense at all. And I told myself I wouldn't talk about Taylor Swift or K-pop, and here we are.
No, I had to ask you, but you did not ramble. I thought it was great, so thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again, Nicole, for joining the podcast to discuss Taylor Swift, to discuss CT Stream, to discuss K-pop, to discuss media, and to discuss Little Tokyo. I think Nicole is someone I have always admired when I see her interact with folks within Little Tokyo or at other events that I see her at. And it was just really cool to talk with her more today and learn more about her. So, if you enjoyed this episode, you could subscribe to our show for episodes that release every other Tuesday, and you could give us a rating or review on your favorite podcast platform. If you would like to support our podcast and help us grow, you can do so with a donation to the link at the bottom of the episode description. To hear more about Changing Tides, follow us on Instagram at LTSC_changingtides, or check out our website, thechangingtides.org. Let's continue to change the tide on mental health.